If you're ever in Philadelphia and someone says to you, "Meet me at the Eagle," what they want is a rendezvous at Macy's Department Store in Center City. There you'll find a 2,500-pound bronze eagle located in the Grand Court. But those who love music, well, it's actually the Wanamaker Organ, which is the most notable landmark there. With almost 28,500 pipes, it is the largest playable instrument in the world. I mention this because there was a day that shoppers experienced an unexpected musical surprise. A 650-member choir decided to delight the shoppers with a random act of culture. Acting like fellow shoppers, the choir mingled with the crowds and waited. At noon, the Wanamaker organ began to play a chorus from Handel's Messiah, and all at once, the several hundred undercover sopranos, altos, tenors, and basses erupted in song, and these unsuspecting shoppers found themselves suddenly in the middle of a glorious worship service. Many of them pulled out their devices to capture this moment. They were clearly enjoying this unexpected surprise. Others stood there with sheepish grins, not really knowing what to do because they weren't in on the gag. What most surprised me as I watched this was some folks who just continued to shop. They were pretending like there was not anything out of the ordinary going on. They were completely oblivious to the praise of God. Here they were, surrounded by hundreds of trained vocalists, singing praises to the glorious notes of thousands of pipes. And all they seemed to notice was the purse on sale, or the nice Oxford sweater that would go great with these shoes. Now, if I had been there in person, I would have shouted, "Hey, stop what you're doing. You need to get with the program." And that is exactly what James is saying in James 4, verse 13. He says, "Come now, you who say, 'Today or tomorrow we'll go into such and such a town and spend a year there and try to make a profit.' Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring." Hi, I'm Joel of Heart City Church, and we've been considering the Apostle James' letter to the Christians, and he's been teaching us the way of humility, the posture we are to take as God's people. And James gives us here a second example of what it looks like to lack humility in chapter 4. We need to hear James' shouting when he says, "Come now, you who say, 'Today or tomorrow we'll go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade to make a profit.' Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring." James wants us to envision a couple of businessmen who are making plans, filling out their planners. They have a map in front of them, perhaps, and they're looking at where to go and what they will do when they get there. And, of course, the purpose, which is to make a profit. These fellows have the when, the where, the what, and the why all figured out. Now, there's absolutely nothing wrong with making plans for the future. We're supposed to be charting a course for our lives. The problem is, they're doing this with no thought of God. That is why James says in verse 15, "Instead, you ought to say, 'If the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that.' As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil." Friends, when we plan for our future, it is incumbent upon us that we keep at the forefront of our minds God's plans and purposes. Humility recognizes God may change our situations. You see, God has prepared beforehand certain works for us to walk in, Ephesians 2:10. And we may find we need to drop our plans to get on board with what God is doing in our world. And humility further means acknowledging that God is sovereign over all future things. We have no guarantee that our plans will come to fruition in the history that God is fashioning. That's the problem with these fellows. They're saying, "Today or tomorrow we'll do this and that, and we can anticipate this result." And James rebukes this way of thinking as arrogant and evil. He says, "You do not know what tomorrow will bring." Scottish theologian Robert Murray McShane once wrote in his journal, "As to myself, I have no plans. As to myself, I have no plans." Now, this may sound strange to us. Someone with no plans for the future would be seen as a fool. But McShane was not saying that we never make plans. Rather, he was saying that the most important thing was not his plans for his life, but God's plans for his life. And God's plans are always better than ours. And I can testify that this is a wise way to live, my friends. When I have this attitude, well, I'm not ruined when God yanks the rug out from under me. I can say with Job that the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be his name. And join with the choir singing praise to the author of human history. Believer, when God takes something from us or changes our plans, it is because he means us well, and he can better plan our futures than we can ourselves. Remember who you are and who you belong to.